Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music. We'll interview some working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change. And we'll toss in an educational sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
That's it for you. We'll be right here.
At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So listen up, let's get right down to it with episode number
71
of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain.
Thank you.
the world that human nature ain't natural at all. Mankind, they kind of nothing. What do you see up there above us all?
That was Moi, Y'all, one of my fave cuts from my old CD, Scott Merrick's Songs for Alaska, featuring the Last Frontier Band. That's Dana Ward with me on vocals and auto harp, Lynn Goodmanson on violin, and my old pal Dr. Don Schultz on banjo. The CD is available at my website at scottmerrick.net and at iTunes and Omeglory, pretty much all over the place online. I think it was a good lead-in to a podcast featuring a talk by Fisk University physics professor Kent Wallace, completely fired up, sorry, over model rocketry. Dr. Wallace is a prime mover, a faculty sponsor to be exact, behind the Fisk Altitude Adjustment Missile Team. So you can check that out at faamt.org. This is an award-winning group of students and faculty who make a point of sharing their enthusiasm with students throughout Middle Tennessee through their outreach. In addition to taking out chemical fuel-based rockets to demonstrate, these folks also work with water bottle rockets and egg launcher rockets, all sorts of fun things. They're a busy bunch, and our community is all the better for them. Listen to how much fun his chat with the freshman class from the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt was. Along with the dialogue, you will hear traffic sounds and the Vanderbilt Life Flight Chopper flying over a soccer practice field along the south edge of the Vanderbilt University campus. I'll have another Alaska song for you after the chat, then I'll let you be for a couple of weeks. Listen up to Kent Wallace from the Fisk Altitude Adjustment Missile Team from Fisk University.
Who knows what the first man-made object put into space was? And it's older than Sputnik. It's actually older than Sputnik by about 15 years. Anybody? I'll give you a hint.
A water bottle rocket.
No, but there is a world record for how far a water bottle rocket went. But it wasn't a water bottle rocket.
It was a rocket from October sky.
No. It didn't go into space. But you're on the right.
Give us a hint. I'm trying to give us a hint. Hush.
The hint is it was used by people or by a party that most people don't think was, well, actually, 90% of the world doesn't think were good people.
Nazis.
Yes. The Nazi Party, the German war machine, created the V-2 rocket. The V-2 rocket carried a 600-pound warhead, and it went over the English Channel, and it landed pretty much around London. That was the first object that ever went into space. It was a low Earth orbit. It didn't even orbit. It just made it to space and fell on its target. And as far as rockets go, they were relatively accurate. So when World War II ended, the rocket scientists went to two places, Russia and the United States. And Wernher von Braun, if any of you know that name, was one of the lead rocket researchers in the United States who came from Germany. And he was the spearhead that developed what is our space program. Now, the things that we put into space under von Braun, aside from just warheads, who heard of Saturn V? What's Saturn V?
I don't know. I just heard of it.
And I was like, oh, she's going to get the hat. Okay. Do you know what Saturn V was? No, it wasn't a ballistic missile.
Satellite to orbit the Earth and get data.
You know what? You're 30% right. It didn't orbit the Earth for a while, but it was to collect data. But it wasn't just a satellite. It was the rocket that took man to the moon. It orbited the Earth, got its stuff together, and then it went to the moon, orbited the moon while two astronauts went down, did their thing, collect some rocks, rode a buggy, played golf, it was kind of cool. And they planted our flag, and then they came back. and it was the Saturn V rocket. Now, who knows the name of the rocket that we are building currently that's going to go back to the moon?
Saturn VI.
No.
But that would have been my guess, too. It's called the Aegis system. Aegis 1 and Aegis 5. Aegis 1, instead of putting all the stuff in one rocket, like we did the first time, we're going to send them up in two rockets. One will go up with the passengers, that's Aegis 1, and then the other rocket will take up the equipment, and that's Aegis 5. And Aegis 5 is actually bigger than Saturn 5. You know, I really don't know this numbering system. NASA's kind of like, they love acronyms and they love numbers out of order. So, no, Saturn V, what was Saturn II, 1? I couldn't tell you. But, I do know this. We are going back to the moon. And does anyone know why we're going to the moon?
To plant another flag.
We can survive.
You know what? On that one, I'm just going to do this. Because you know we're going to plant. And all we're going to do is go to the Soviet Union.
Don't know that one, now.
Okay, so, seriously, why are we going to the moon? You were saying, what did you say? To colonize? No. Not to colonize. It has another purpose. It's a staging area. It'll be a staging area for us to go to Mars. We are committed in the sciences to visit other systems. We're going to go back to the moon to prove we can do it, and then from the moon we're going to go to Mars. And then we're going to hang out there for a few years. Actually, we're going to probably hang out there as long as we can. Now, here is where all of that has to do with you. The people that were the scientists, the rocket scientists, and the physicists that put us on the moon, they are all near the age of retirement. They're older than me, they're older than you, they're older than your instructors. They are of a different generation of scientists, and they're retiring at an alarming rate at NASA. And the problem is this, NASA does not have enough scientists going into the pipeline to replace the ones that are coming out. Because for years, we started to take it for granted that we were the bad boys on the block when it came to space and science. But little did we know that the Russians still were working on it. The Europeans have their, like we have NASA, the Europeans have ESA, which is the European Space Agency. China has a space program. India is developing a space program. So what that's saying is a lot of different countries are developing space programs that may in fact surpass ours one day. And the United States still wants to lead in space. So how this ties into you is, if all of these scientists are all retiring, where do you think our next group of scientists are going to come from? Right where you're sitting. You all are the next generation of
scientists.
Did I miss something? But it's really the absolute truth. We're going to retire the shuttle in two more years. Everyone knows the space shuttle, right? After the space shuttle is retired, because it's an old system, and as you can tell, it has flaws, they're going to go into another rocket system. And after that system, in 2014, we're going to the moon. Now, you might think that 2014 is a long way away. I promise you, it's not as long as you think. And I'll give you an example. When I was your age, they set up this rocket that was called Voyager. Does anybody know Voyager? Yes, what's Voyager?
I heard of it. The movie.
You heard it where?
I heard of it.
Where'd you hear about it?
What movie?
Star Trek. And they called it Beagar. Because in Star Trek, which is a science fiction movie, in the first movie, they went up and this rocket, this satellite took their people. And they were like, well, where'd this thing come from? And they said, it's Beagar. Well, it wasn't Beagar. It was actually Voyager, and some of the words were blotted out, so they called it Beagar accidentally. They called it Beagar 6, I think. But it was a science fiction movie. It was science fiction after something that was fast. Beagar was satellites that were sent to observe Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. We couldn't get Pluto. But there were two Voyagers, and in the movie they sent five. So Voyager actually got us close-up pictures of Saturn and Jupiter. And why was that important? Because we learned a lot about Jupiter. I'm going to tell you something that will blow your mind. Do any of you know that Jupiter, if it had gotten just a little bit more mass, would have been another star, just like the Sun? And this wouldn't be a single star system. This would be binary star system, which means two. Did anyone know that? Because Jupiter is not a solid planet like Earth, where it's hard rock, dirt, terraform. Jupiter is all gas. And just like the Sun, it's a super hot ball of gas. And if you get enough gas out of space, it gets so hot that it turns on a nuclear furnace and it turns into a star. So Jupiter, you can actually thank Jupiter for not becoming a star, because there's no guarantee that Earth would be here. And if it would, which one would we have orbited? Maybe there would have been like a figure eight, or this one, or that one. That would be kind of weird. Because then Christmas would be like every other year. But anyway, so, I mean, you see all these interesting things of why we want to go into space? Now, another thing that I like to share, just because it's so cool, what color is the Sun? White. The dominant band that the Sun emits, because you know light has different colors, the dominant band is actually green. So if you look at a color spectrum, the Sun would be green. But it's filtered out by all the other colors, so you get the white. But if you ever looked at it through a color spectrum, the Sun actually emits green. Yeah, I learned that. I was just sitting there going, I really just never would have guessed that. But here's now back to you. So we need a whole new generation of scientists. And like we said, a GS5 is huge. I mean, let me try to give you an idea of how huge it is. What's the tallest building in Nashville? The Bat Tower. A GS5 stands as tall, if I'm correct, it stands as tall as the Bat Tower, or just under. Now imagine a rocket the size of a building going into space. Can you imagine how heavy that is and how much power has to get it off the ground? Well, we're designing it, but what comes after that? Because they'll probably get into space, and then they're like, well, we need a new set of scientists. Where are they going to come from? As I said, you. Any of you all ever thought about being a rocket scientist, or maybe a scientist of any variety, biologist, engineer? Oh, a lot of you. That's good. Let's just see. What kind of scientist do you want? Microbiologist? How about you? Astronomy? Good. You didn't raise your hand. I was like, I didn't raise my hand. Embarrassing. Okay, how about you? Can we a what? A neuropathologist. Then you actually have scientific proof that I might be a little off my rocker. That's okay. Who raised their hand over here? Anybody? You did? And what kind of scientist would you like to be?
Astronomer.
Now, as you can imagine, we said microbiologist, we said an astronomer, and we had a neuropathologist. Do you realize that NASA needs all of those? I'll give you an example. Who would have imagined that NASA needs to employ psychologists? What do you think NASA would need a psychologist for?
Like,
to make sure that they're mentally fit to go into space.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, a little joke that I say recently is, you don't hear about that woman, the astronaut that was traveling across the United States trying to get her ex husband or boyfriend or whatever. And we were all like, okay, whatever screening process y'all have, you might want a new one. But nevertheless, you're right. We have to see if that astronauts are mentally ready to be in space. Here's another reason. If you were going to make a sign on the space station, the International Space Station, what color would you make it to mean there's an emergency? You'd make it red. But it's an international space station, which means we have people from various countries on that station. So guess what? You wouldn't want it to be red. Does anybody have an idea why? Because there are Russians on the space station. And the Russians' color for emergency is not red. To red, to a Russian, is a party. It's like, oh no, don't touch that button. You know, who knows what the emergency color for Russians are?
Green.
No. Wow. Everyone, green's everybody. Everybody in the world loves green, so it's not green.
Wow.
It's yellow. An emergency in Russian means yellow. So, what you have to have a psychologist to do is say, well, hey, if we're going to have an international space station and we're going to have a lot of people from different countries, we need to look at the cultural background of all the different astronauts so that we can make a color code system that everybody can identify with. We just can't assume that because we're the United States that it has to be the colors that we acknowledge. There are Israelis in space, Europeans, British, well, Europeans broad. So we'll say England, France, Israel, Russia, China. So we have to be sensitive to all those backgrounds when it comes to what color code system we use. And that's another reason why NASA needs psychologists. Okay, microbiology. Who's to say what cures that we can come up with by looking at specimens in zero gravity? Or astronomy. Now, that's an easy one. Hubble Space Telescope. And guess what? Hubble Space Telescope is old. They are actually going to decommission the Hubble Space Telescope. As beautiful as the pictures are, it's a pain to maintain. We're going up almost every other year trying to put new lenses on. So they're actually designing a new telescope to go in space. Huh? James Webb? Is that the name of it? I didn't even know the name of it. The astronomers are rocking today. Now, one of our graduate students, this is Tommy. Tommy is doing his PhD in astronomy. So you were all over on James Webb, right?
Kind of. Yeah.
Well, I wish you told me before I got here, but that's okay. Now, it's kind of cool. Tommy, is it black holes or galaxies that you do?
No, I'm doing young stars.
Young stars. So, for those of y'all in astronomy, there's just all kinds of things to look at in space. Young stars, black holes, novas, supernovas, white dwarfs, neutron stars, just all kinds of stuff. There's, for everything we get an answer to, we get 50 more questions. And that's why NASA needs it. Now back to the rockets. How do we get this stuff in space? Rockets. And we need rocket scientists. We need rocket scientists to come up with new propulsion systems. How many people know Star Wars? Everyone saw it? Please.
Well, I think they had it.
Huh? It was on I actually started to say, if you didn't see Star Wars, you really couldn't qualify as an American. So I was deported. But, I mean, the thing about Star Wars that is so awe-inspiring is that it gave us this idea of things in space. Star Trek and Star Wars are pretty much a big fantasy as far as how space is. In fact, a lot of science fiction is borrowed from science fact. Case in point, what was the fighter that the Empire liked to fly around in with two big, the TIE fighter? Guess what TIE stands for? Does anyone know what TIE stands for? Twin Ion Engines. Ion engines is an actual propulsion system where they use ions to push a rocket through space. So just because it's science fiction doesn't mean that they don't pull it out of science fact. Even Star Trek, the teleporter. Did anyone ever see that special that came on, 100 Reasons Why You Have to Thank Captain Kirk for What We Have in the Modern World? Well, it was interesting because the show said...
There's a movie called William Shatner Changed the World.
There are a lot of things that we have today that were really imagination from that period or that movie or that series. Case in point, how many people carry a cell phone? All of us. Even I have a cell phone. Okay, it's old, it's not an iPhone, but hey, I still talk, I'm good. Now, this was inspired by the communicator. Anyone see Star Trek original series? They had that little thing that flipped open. Okay, y'all aren't cool. But anyway. So, he had this thing, he'd pop it out, and he would flip it like this, and he'd go, fuck, I need to know right now. Where are you? So then, in the movies, when it got out to the movies, what did they do? They went from the flip phone. Actually, that was the first flip phone. Wow, kind of funny. What did they go from there? Anyone remember? It was their badge. I think in the movies there, they had the watch phone, which I think they borrowed from...
Dick Tracy.
And then they went to the badge. They touched the badge, and then they just talked into the... This is just weird. Okay, but what does this remind you of? The what?
Walkie-talkie.
Walkie-talkie. What do we talk on now? Bluetooth. Big in your ear. We just don't wear it here looking dorky because we're not in the military. But all of these things from science fiction originally started to come science fact.
Come on, you can do it.
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
Science fact indeed, in the best manner. Thanks to Dr. Kent Wallace for that cool session and for the launch demos just a few minutes after when the kids heard and saw the launch of three rockets, one of which is featured as video at the Snacks for the Brain blog. That's blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4theB. I'll be blogging like a madman at the National Educational Computing Conference in San Antonio, Texas in a couple weeks, and I'll have at least one podcast for you from the goings-on there, where 20,000 or so educators and technologists will meet to help facilitate the future of educational technology. http://isti.org for more info, and keep an eye on scottmerrick.net. Cool. Here's another Alaska song. I don't have a jet song for you, but I do have a train song. This is Train Sounds from my own CD, available at iTunes and pretty much everywhere. See ya!
How I lost the love we found. Train sounds. Got my good ear to the ground by the side of the track. If I ride that rail, I never will be back. I don't care where it's been or where it's bound. Train sounds. Watching the towns I'm leaving behind, a clicking and a clacking like a child's toy. A room full of trains and one little boy. Life isn't fair, it's done on a dare. Would it really even be any different there? Freight train comes and then it rolls away. It rumbles like the ocean on a stormy day. I wonder why I even hang around. Train sounds.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.